G'day, folks, and welcome to another episode of Creative Conversations. And my guest today is the wonderful Heather Price, who's joining us from Newcastle in New South Wales. Heather is a writer and performer, and I'm going to get her to explain a little bit about what she writes and what she performs during the course of this conversation. But Heather, wonderful to see you.
Oh, thanks, Dave. Good to be here.
Fantastic. I should tell folks, I've known Heather for, a number of years. And I first met Heather when she was my vocal coach. So how about that? Don't blame her. She did her best.
I had plenty to work with.
Oh, thank you. That's very nice. There was plenty of work to be done is another way of looking at it. All right, a writer, a performer. Now, I obviously know a little bit about some of the performing and writing that you've done, and I've been lucky enough to share the stage with you on a couple of occasions over the years. So tell us a little bit about the performing side of your life.
Well, at the moment, performing for me is different to what it's been throughout, I guess, a fair part of my life, in that maybe it's because I'm in my late 30s now that I've decided that I like playing jazz and classical more than rock. But because I could never make a decision with my music, I did a classical degree on double bass, but also did singing grades and all sorts of stuff, but mainly performed in rock and contemporary, I guess you'd call it, until I was about 26, and that's when I started playing classically in orchestras and followed that path for a while, but I still couldn't quite completely commit to it. But I guess having kids and I guess just kids make you decide what's worth spending the time on, and that's more recently led me down the path of jazz and classical, and so that's where most of my performance is at the moment.
And that's on double bass?
Both. Double bass and vocals, so you go.
I was going to say, when I had a chat with your husband a few weeks ago, Adam, he referred to you as a rock goddess, so we can't do that anymore. You're a classic jazz goddess now.
I do still get to sing some rock, but mostly in singing lessons with students. So it's just been a while since I've had a platform to do that. But doesn't mean I wouldn't like to do it again. But just maturing, I guess.
Fair enough. Well, let's look at the other part of maturing, where you started from, the early years. When did you know you were creative, Heather? Was it just a progression, or did you wake up one day and go, that's it, I can do this?
I don't know that I could put any sort of date on that, in that when I was born, my mum and dad had just quit their jobs. My mum was a high school maths teacher. My dad was an architect, and they both gave it up to become private music teachers. My mum played the piano. She'd done eighth grade piano, I think, and was a singer. And dad played the clarinet and saxophone and organ. And, well, dad got his first job after he quit architecture, selling organs. And he hated selling organs, but he liked the free lesson that he had to give people with the organ. And so they'd both just gone into music teaching when I was born, and they're still they're going to retire at the end of the year, but that's what they've been doing for the last 37, nearly 38 years. And so being born into that, I was in singing lessons and music lessons from the day I was born, I guess, really. And so just absolutely surrounded by it. And Mum talks about teaching lessons where she would give a student a scale to sing back, and then you'd hear a little voice from the next room singing it back instead, which was me. And she said half the time it was more in tune than the student that was singing it back as well. But I guess just being surrounded by it, it was, I was going to classical concerts that my mum was singing, apparently from when I was, I think, a month old or something like that. And so as soon as I was old enough to kind of be a part of it, I guess I was, you know, I became my dad's bass player and, I don't know. So I definitely couldn't put a start date on it. It was just, that's just been my life, I guess.
You just had an immersive experience. It was just all around you. No choice.
Yes. Yeah.
Normally when I start these sessions too, I ask our guests what they brought along to drink, and I haven't done that with you. So I might just go there for a moment, because you're a classy lady. You've brought along a glass of red by the look of it.
I have. I'm not classy enough to know actually what kind of red it is. I didn't check the bottle. But it's not.
Yeah, it's night time. Why not?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter for me. I still go coffee day, night.
No, yeah. No way.
Well, I don't mind a red. When did you know that you wanted to pursue it as a career, though? It's one thing to be musical or creative. It's another thing to say, yes, I want to do this as my living. And was there a moment?
That's probably easier for me to define, in that I had a pretty massive bump in the road for me. When I got to high school, I'd been playing violin for 7 years. And decided it wasn't cool anymore.
I played violin. This is a new one.
That was my first instrument. I apparently begged my parents to let me play the violin from when I was about 3. I started when I was 5. But I got to high school and I thought, this is embarrassing. Probably because I'm sure I was a good musician, but I wasn't that good at violin. I wasn't good enough for it to be cool. And so I wanted to, I quit, and the school band needed a bass player, and my dad said if I took up bass, then I'd never be out of work, and he was right. And I started my own band with my brother called Silent Scream, and I loved it. It was the best, and I sang and played bass from the start of that band. But then almost at the same time, I was diagnosed with what's called otosclerosis, and I lost about 60% of my hearing when I was about 14, and got incredibly bad tinnitus and pulsing in my ears, which was really frustrating, and noticeably lost my hearing. Like, I found it really hard to understand conversations a lot of the time. Rock music I could still hear. But I had when I was diagnosed, I went to an ENT who confirmed what they had, suspected, that I had otosclerosis, and he'd said that have any sort of career in the public eye, which now I think it's a horrible thing to say to a 14-year-old kid. I decided at that moment that, apart from the fact that I hated that guy, that I was going to prove him wrong. I didn't go back for another hearing test until I was like 19 or something, but I just kept going and thought, nah, stuff this, I'll just keep playing and I'm going to, you know, get famous and stand up there and pretty much give him the bird.
Yes. Way to go.
I guess there was a couple of, that was a big hiccup in that, even though I was really determined to do that, when I got to the end of high school, I wasn't sure about following music as a pathway. I was also very studious, and so I thought I should do something with my marks. I went and started a communications degree at uni, and I did a week of it, and I, I just couldn't stand it. So I moved over to a Bachelor of Music, and I guess I'd kind of put these, I must have known that I wanted to do it, because when I was 16, I took up double bass, because in Newcastle, where I'm from, they only had a classical degree. I didn't play classical music at that time, but I thought, I better take up double bass so I've got a classical bass instrument I can play if I want to go to uni. And that's what I did a week after I'd done the audition. So I knew I was in, but when I decided, I just really couldn't stand communication studies. Not that there's anything wrong with communication studies, it just wasn't for me. I moved over to music, and I had a brilliant time there. It was perfect for me. And that's when I really knew. I loved being part of that community. It wasn't just the music. I mean, I really loved learning more about music too, but it's like I found my people. And yeah, it's still like moving back to Newcastle recently. I now I get to play in an orchestra with those that sort of same group of people, and it's like coming back to, yeah, well, old friends but family, and it's a lovely feeling. Yeah,
that's wonderful. And so that's another thing I didn't know about you. I didn't actually know that you had loss of hearing. Mm-hmm. For someone, 60%, is that still an issue? Like, it doesn't...
No, because when I was... So with otosclerosis, the hearing condition I have, it's affected by hormones. And so when I was 13 or 14, obviously I hit puberty. And that's when I lost my hearing. But for a lot of women, it mainly primarily affects women. They don't know about it till they fall pregnant. And it's also often genetic. And so my grandmother, that was her experience. And there's an operation they can perform called a stapedectomy, where they take your stapedius muscle, Stapes bone, out of your ear, which is the smallest bone in your body, and replace it with a prosthetic. But at the time in Newcastle, the specialist that I'd seen when I was, I probably went and saw a couple when I was about 18 or 19, and everybody just told me about the side, like, you know, it was not side effects, but the risks that were involved. You know, you could potentially lose all of your hearing in that year. So nobody really wanted to do it. But the catalyst for me really finding out about it was when I had decided I was going to go over to the UK to live for 18 months, 2 years I was planning that. I'd realized that I couldn't understand what people were saying in Australia. How on earth was I going to work behind a bar in the UK? And it just happened, I guess these beautiful synergies happen. But my mum at the time was doing a PhD in vocal science in Sydney. And so she talked to a couple of the ENTs that worked in the same faculty, and they recommended a doctor called Professor De Cruz, who was a specialist in otosclerosis. And I went to see him, and it was the most amazing day in that I walked in, and he's a violinist. He was the concertmaster of the doctor's orchestra.
Oh, wow.
And he basically, at that stage, I'd finished my degree, and I had a fellowship with Australian Youth Orchestra, and he just said, I can't believe that you've been playing with this little hearing. Next Wednesday, you're going to come in and I'm going to fix your right ear. And that's what happened. It was literally the last possible chance I could have had, because I couldn't fly for 6 weeks or something like that, and it was about 7 weeks before I went to the UK, and I had to drive myself to Adelaide after that to carry out my Australian Youth Orchestra Fellowship. But it was amazing in that I got my hearing fixed and I went to Adelaide for this fellowship, and it was the first time I'd really heard an orchestra because my hearing had been so muffled. It was an amazing experience, and my hearing, I mean, I got my other ear fixed by the same doctor when I was 28, and it's, yeah, pretty amazing. I have very normal hearing these days. I mean, it could deteriorate a little quicker than other people's, but I feel very lucky to have had the opportunity to to get my hearing back, but also I guess in some ways I appreciate my hearing. Like I think it's, I forget about it sometimes and take it for granted again, but to know what it's like to not be able to hear things like that means I guess you appreciate the sound a lot more.
That's extraordinary. And it is one of the questions I always ask is what challenges have you had to overcome? So that's a hell of a challenge.
Yes.
I have to say. So
it didn't really feel like a, I don't know how it didn't feel like a challenge. Like I know even with doing my HSC, I remember that being at school that I would specifically put myself in the front row of the class so that I could hear the teacher.
Quite the opposite to me, Heather, I have to say.
Sorry?
Quite the opposite to me. I preferred the back.
I was nerd through and through, don't worry. And I'd have to do the same at uni. I had to sit right at the front. I often had to check with people that I'd heard what the lecturer had said properly, or I'd get lecture notes to make sure that I knew what I was doing. But the other thing is that because otosclerosis is a bone conduction problem, so actually what happens is there's you can't hear well through here, but you can still hear with the bone yes. conduction past where the hearing problem is. And so the Dr. De Cruz that fixed my hearing, he actually seemed to think that that would have drawn me to double bass, in that because the bass was resting against my bones, I could still hear it really clearly. And so I guess in that way, it was more that I wouldn't be able to hear the violins I was playing with or something like that. So I just had to learn to really follow conductors and, I don't know. But so it didn't feel like a challenge at the time. But, if I heard of somebody else. But when I look back on it, I guess, I think, I don't know how I did that. But,
So challenges are one thing. What about resistance? So you've decided to take on a career in music. A notoriously lucrative and stable career. Now, your parents obviously do it. Did you encounter resistance to pursuing that, or is it something that was fairly easy?
Resistance, yes. Sometimes I guess I have felt a bit like music's a curse. I know it sounds horrible to say, but... because for me, and being in a relationship where another person has music in their life, and I guess being surrounded by a family that's like that, it's almost like each person, I believe, that music's really important to them. I guess probably it's for all arts, I'm guessing. It's like you have another child that you have to look after. You have to give time to it, or otherwise... things don't feel right for you. You become this horrible negative person. And so sometimes I've felt like music was a curse. I wish I could just do a 9-to-5 job and come home and enjoy some nothing time. But because of the way, because of having music, I feel that I still have to earn money, obviously. So I have to, even though I teach music to earn money, it's still a job, so I still have to do that. But then I need time to nurture my own artistic stuff, and so sometimes it feels like it's just too much, especially when you have children as well. So you have real physical children to look after as well as your own artistic child, and need to make room for all the other artistic children that are in your family as well. So, if that makes sense, I don't know. So, no, yes, sometimes.
It does. And I love that you refer to it as artistic children. Why do you do that?
I read a book called The Artist's Way.
Fabulous book.
And they refer to, she refers to it, Julia Cameron is the author's name, as nurturing your artistic child, taking it out on play dates and stuff like that. And that really worked for me.
wonderful book. I read it many years ago myself, and did the whole journaling thing for a while, and stream of consciousness, the dates. Fantastic. And so if anyone is looking for a bit of inspiration, grab the book, Julia Cameron, The Artist's Way, fabulous book.
Yeah, yeah, it actually made a big difference to me in that even with performance anxiety, the journaling aspect of it, I still use to this day if I feel that I'm really anxious about something, about a performance, or particularly when I was doing a lot of orchestral auditions, where often you know the panel of people you're about to play for, and but it's high level stuff that you've got to play, that you're pretty much playing at your peak, or you're trying to and not playing at your peak. And so to get rid of the anxiety, so many times before an audition I would go and sit in a cafe and write until I had nothing else to write. So writing out all the negative things that I was thinking, or the things I was imagining could happen in the audition, and that's always worked for me, just getting rid of all that to settle down anxiety.
That kind of leads into some of my other questions on process, and this may actually be more applicable, or maybe it is, maybe it isn't, to the writing part of what you do. So we've talked about the performing, the playing, and I'm curious about the writing that you do and what that is and involves.
These days I write mainly music for church, and music more particularly for kids style, or what's termed multi-generational music these days. But I guess I kind of aim it more at my kids. The kids go to a thing called Messy Church, which is, I don't know, a new movement in church, I guess you'd call it. It's supposed to be for families. And the particular church that we go to, I guess, is quite progressive in theology. And so I wanted to write some music for it that reflected that, whereas a lot of the old hymns don't really fit for what we do these days. And so I just started doing that, and it's probably been more successful than any of the other stuff I've written before, which is pretty funny, because I wrote it not intending to do anything with it apart from take it along so the kids could sing it. And yeah, that's been a really nice outlet, because I guess just like music was around me from when I was born, I have attended the same church as my kids now go to as well since I was born. And it's the church we were married in, it's the church my parents were married in, it's the church my grandparents went to, and it's the church my great-grandparents went to. So sometimes I feel like there's so much of my own culture that comes from that one building, that's happened in that one building, that it's nice to give a little bit back to that. So
so people can buy this music, can't they? If they go to your website?
Yes.
I will put in the show notes the web address, but it is heatherprice.com.au if I'm not mistaken.
It is.
Okay, we'll mention it now. Go along and buy all of her music.
Just do it. Go for it.
Yeah, go for it, exactly. buy it twice. Let's talk a little bit about process. So when you're writing, do you have a particular process that you follow? Is there, for example, a particular time of day you like to write, a place you go, a favorite chair, a favorite drink that you like to take along, that sort of thing?
No. I find most of my writing happens within a period of about a minute. it's really quick, and most of it happens lyrically. It's lyric driven. So I might have an idea for something that I want a song about, and I'll get even just one line come to me, and it usually comes, I guess, attached with some sort of melody or at least a rhythm. And so my iPhone is my best friend, and I chuck voice memos on and I quickly get that down before I forget it. But 9 times out of 10, it's in between teaching lessons or actually the most productive place for me to write is if I have a car journey I have to do and I'm actually in the car on my own. I have written so many songs like that. Just, you know, if I've got a student that's got an exam I've got to go to that's an hour away or something like that, yeah, 9 times out of 10, I'll come back with at least one or two songs, like the choruses written.
Wow.
Who are having a phone next to me and, yeah.
So this is something. I find this interesting. I've been writing myself for a long time, and it used to be good old pen and paper. These days I capture everything electronically. And that's one of the questions I ask. How do you make sure you don't lose that inspiration? So you use the voice memo, and then what do you do with it after that? Do you go back and then transcribe it or start working on it and capture it in some other way or?
Yeah, I think once upon a time I would have sat down and written it all out and like really thought about the lyrics a lot. And now I just don't get that time very often. And so, I mean, even not just with writing, but even with practice, most of my singing practice happens in the car to and from work. Like when I'm there without kids or anything like that, that's when I do it. And so same thing with writing. And with learning music or writing music, what I find is my brain will just churn the idea over and sing that part over until it sort of finds a pathway to what's coming next.
Right.
And that's when I need my iPhone there again, because I need to get that idea down. But yeah, to me, I find that it's repetition of like just sort of sticking with one song or sticking with what I've got for a song and then singing that through enough. And it most of the time it's not a conscious idea to sing it through. It just keeps going over and over and over in my head. It's like my brain does it without me making it do it, if that makes sense. I don't know how to explain it better than that.
No, it makes perfect sense. It's very similar to my process, actually. A lot of repetition. Mm-hmm. I think if people were watching the writing process, would they be bored silly if it was that? There's a lot of repetition, and then it's like, oh, then it goes somewhere, and you go, oh, okay, and you follow that path. At least that's how I do it. I understand that the singing practice in the car, that's what I used to do on the way to lessons.
Hey, at least you did it.
I was gonna say, you could never tell, could you? How do you deal with distractions? Now, you're a busy woman, you've got a couple of gorgeous daughters, you've got a husband, you've got demands on your time. So how do you deal with those distractions when you want to create?
Sometimes I think you have to consciously make time. I've had periods of time where I've actually decided I would get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and, you know, go and have meditation time or, you know, whatever I feel like doing in order to kind of get that space, even if it's not actually sitting down and being creative.
Yeah.
Or creating something, it's just making space for something like that. But sometimes when things are really busy, like for me, I guess it's different because for me, often when things are really busy, it means there's performances on. And I find that just gets me zinging. And so even though it's busy, I'm feeling really creative. And sometimes that is enough to get something to blow, like get ideas to come flowing as well. But sometimes as well, I find, you know, I've got to pay attention to which way to go usually with it, but sometimes it's important to just know it's okay to wait as well. And that, well, for my work, it comes in ebbs and flows, and that there will be a downtime and that it will be really nice to write. but to enjoy what's happening when it's busy, because if I try and fight it, I don't enjoy any of it, and that's no good for creativity. So I've found riding the wave and learning to wait is good. That's probably my favorite way to do it at the moment. But also knowing that sometimes 10 minutes is enough, that I don't have to look for a period of 4 hours or something like that to sit down and write, but just enough time to get an idea started is usually good.
Okay, so we lost Heather for a moment, but she's back. And that, folks, the vagaries of the Australian internet, I'm afraid. Anyway, you're back. And we were talking before you disappeared on me about inspiration. What inspires you to create?
It's so many different things, I guess. I actually find that often with writing, I guess it's very much to do with seeing that there's a need for something. I find it hard to just sit down and it's occasional that I just sit down and write a song because that's how I'm feeling. That's definitely how I used to write when I was younger. I just was angry about something and wanted to write about it. Yeah. And now I feel like and maybe it's a time thing, that my writing is more a functional sort of thing. But as for being inspired creatively, just to, like, as a whole, to sort of just turn up to the instrument or turn up and do something creative. I find collaboration is what really gets me going. I do like to play for myself as well, but collaborating with other people, I guess it kind of puts a deadline on it as well, but it's so rewarding too. I think there's something incredibly unspeakably special about the act of playing music together, and something really spiritual about it, in that you're sort of connecting without speaking. And you know, in classical music, you don't even count each other in. You breathe each other in. Someone sort of sniffs and then all of a sudden you're all in together, you know? The more I play it, the more I really love that. I like that no one's talking, but somehow you're all on the same time frame. Everybody's, you know, feeling the same tempo and moving in the same way, and but you don't have to think too deeply about it at the same time, even though it is such a deep experience. It's just playing what's on the page, or, you know, in jazz you're not just playing what's on the page. But yeah, I think that's what really spurs me on, is the high I get from playing with other people. And and, you know, the writing side of it too, I guess that probably works as well. When I was saying it's functional, these days I write songs for them to be sung. And so in the act of singing them with other people, that gives me a huge sense of satisfaction and spurs me on to want to write more. So I think that's probably the best way of describing it.
Brilliant. I'm going to take you back a little bit. You've got two young daughters, and you were their age once, not very long ago. What advice would you give a younger you? What advice would you give your daughters about pursuing a creative life?
it has to come from your own guts, your desire to do it. So, you know, I have so many students come through and you can tell the ones that it's their desire and you can tell the ones that their parents' desire. So as much as, you know, there's things that I would love to say to my kids, I think they should do. I think it's often important to stay out of the road and mistakes have to be made and sometimes opportunities have to be missed in order for somebody to really see it for themselves. So I think, yeah, unfortunately, even though, like, you know, I have my own regrets about things that I didn't do, that I had opportunities to do. But if somebody had have made me do them, I couldn't say that I would have looked back at them and thought, oh, well, I'm really glad that somebody made me go and do that show. Lucky I did, because otherwise I'd be sitting there regretting it. But, you know, the act of having missed that opportunity has meant that, you know, in the future I didn't miss the next opportunity, if that makes sense. So I think so much of it is just so important for it to be your own desire. That's probably the only advice I reckon that could be given.
Well, I think it's fantastic advice, actually, and you're spot on. Us parents, we live vicariously through our children, don't we?
Yeah, well, it's easy to have. I mean, I reckon it would be impossible to not have regrets about things in your life. And so then you think you're going to stop your kids from having regrets by telling them about it. But, oh, wow. I think it just creates more pressure, you know.
Part of the learning process.
Mm.
Are there any particular creatives that you really love and admire that you just think, wow, they're the bee's knees and I wish that was me?
I guess there's some, you know, bigger scale creatives that I really admire. I love Stevie Wonder. I mean, I know there's probably a million people in the world who love Stevie Wonder, but there's something about the way he sings that just, it shines when he's, I don't know how to explain it, but I yep. feel so much that you can hear his personality in his singing, and that's always been, I mean, apart from the fact that he writes the most incredible chord progressions, but he just, yeah, he... You can hear him in his music, and that's amazing. That's so inspiring. And he's, you know, 70 and he still sounds like he's 30 singing, which is pretty incredible. But, you know, he's big scale. And I guess as well, having gone through the whole losing hearing thing, you know, so he's lost his sight, and I know that should make your hearing even more acute. But I just mean, you know, conquering adversity and still just carrying on and doing it really damn well.
Doing it real well.
Pretty awesome. I guess another one, when I did lose my hearing, I actually looked into quite a few musicians that were hearing affected, and our youngest daughter, Evie or Evelyn, was named after a percussionist by the name of Evelyn Glennie. And she's a lady who's completely deaf. She lost her hearing, but she's one of the world's leading percussionists, and she performs with many orchestras. And so she plays barefoot so that she can feel the vibrations. That's how she hears sound.
Oh, wow!
She's an incredible, well worth looking into. But you know, not just that. I think my own parents have been a huge inspiration for me, in that my mum, you know, she started her opera career when she was 39, and in some ways it seemed like everything she touched turned to gold, but she worked really hard for that, and yeah, I think such an inspiration, especially me being late 30s now, to know that it's not over. You don't have to be, as a rock musician, or like, you often sort of think 30, you hit 30 and it's over. If you haven't made it by the time you're 30, what the hell are you going to do? You know, like, and my parents have both continued to play music and earn money through music. And even though I've seen the hard side of that for them as well, I guess, yeah, they've sort of both paved the way for me to know that that's possible. And that's, I definitely, I look up to them, but I'm also very inspired by them because they're still doing it.
Still doing it. Good on. It's awesome.
Playing gigs with my dad.
I love it. I love it. And on that note, I'm going to publicly thank you, because when I came back to music in my mid 40s, after probably a good 12 year hiatus, you encouraged me enormously, and I'm in my mid 50s and I'm still doing it. And you're a big reason, part of that reason. So.
No, thanks. I'm lucky enough to have, I have students who are 7 or 8, but I also have students who are 86 and 88. And my 88-year-old student, he still records albums at least one or two a year.
And, one or 2 years. Well, he's a legend.
And I see the quality of life that music brings to his life. And I think it's amazing that just that obviously it's more than just an act of singing. It is life-giving in a lot of ways. Underneath all the money making and all that, we need other things to sustain us. And yeah, so I think age is no barrier.
I agree wholeheartedly. I'm going to let you go because you have things to do and a family to look after. And I really, really appreciate your time. It's great to catch up. It's been a little while. I'm going to ask you to give some thought, if you can, to anyone who you would like me to interview who might be interested in being interviewed for that matter. And you can pass their details on to me, because it's how I get to know who to talk to next. So if you could do that and pass any of those details on to me, that'd be really appreciated. I'm going to ask you to stay on the line. We'll have a chat after the recording's finished, but thank you. It's been wonderful. I encourage everyone, again, get along to heatherprice.com.au, buy everything she's recorded, because she's got to keep her in beer and Skittles. all right. Thank you. I'm going to end the recording now, and we'll catch up soon, I hope.
Yes. Right. Thanks.
Take care. For more information, visit Creative Conversations at www.creativeconversations.com.au.